भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So it's the 19th of June, 2023, in Chicago, Illinois. And we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 61, Lord Balaram Slays Rukmi, Text 4.
Samayavalokalavadarshita Smayavalokalavadarshita Bhavahari Brumandala prahita sorata mantra shondai Patnyas tu soda shashahasra mananga banar Yasyendriyam vimamitum karanayarna sheku Smaya, with concealed laughter Avaloka, of glances, lava, by the traces, darshita, displayed, bhava, by the intentions, hadi, enchanting, bru, of the eyebrows, mandala, by the arch, prahita, sent forth, sorata, romantic, mantra, of messages, shondai, with the manifestations of boldness, patnya, wives, two, but, shodasa, 16, sahasram, thousand, ananga, of Cupid, banai, with the arrows, yasya, whose, indriyam, senses, vimatitum, to agitate, karanai, and by other means, na sekhu, were unable. BBT translation, the arched eyebrows of these 16,000 queens enchantingly express those ladies' secret intentions through coyly smiling, sidelong glances. Thus their eyebrows boldly sent forth conjugal messages. Yet even with these arrows of Cupid and with other means as well, they could not agitate Lord Krishna's senses. So there's no BBT purport. I'm going to read commentary of Sridhar Swami. He says, this is elaborated upon by describing the allurements of these women in the verse beginning smaya. Smaya means concealed laughter, the trace of a glance or a sidelong glance containing that, indicated by that glance, the intention by which this arch of the eyebrows has the quality of stealing the mind. The messages of lust sent by that in which there are the manifestations of boldness, by these manifestations of boldness, which are the arrows of Cupid, and also by other means which are found in the Kama Shastra, whose senses, whose mind, even 16,000 wives were not able to agitate. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, since the word kanana expresses the meaning of sense organ, karanai means with their eyes, with the arrows of Cupid, whose Krishna's senses they could not agitate. So there's also, Jiva Goswami refers to this verse in his Ujjwala Nilamani, in his descriptions of different levels of love, and that's far too lengthy for me to read all of that, but I will be referring to that analysis. Smayavalokalabhadarshitabhavahari Brumandala prahitasoratamantrashodai Patnyastushodasasahasramanangabhanayar Yasyendriyam vimatitam karanayar nasheku. The arched eyebrows of these 16,000 queens enchantingly express those ladies' secret intentions through coyly smiling sidelong glances. Thus their eyebrows boldly sent forth conjugal messages. Yet even with these arrows of Cupid and with other means at well, they could not agitate
Lord Krishna's senses. So Krishna is controlled by what?
Love.
He's controlled by love. And he can't be controlled in any other way. The conditioned souls are always trying to control God, isn't it? Yes. That is their intention. So we're going to look at the three levels of love as explained by Rupa Goswami and Ujjwala Nilamani of Krishna's romantic consorts, and how it is that these queens sometimes can control Krishna and sometimes not. And then we're going to look at how we try to control Krishna and how we can, how we are effective or ineffective. So Rupa Goswami explains that there are three levels of intensity of love among those who have a romantic relationship with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada uses the word conjugal. Of course, in English, the word conjugal specifically refers to married love, but a romantic relationship with the Lord. And these he analyzes with some Sanskrit terms. The only one which I feel is really relevant to remember is samartha. Samartha is the love of the gopis for Krishna. But let's look at all three types. So the first type is compared to a jewel. Happy travels. So good to see you. Hare Krishna. The first is compared to a jewel, and that is kubja. So Srila Prabhupada talks about how kubja had almost lusty desires. Had her desire to unite with Krishna. There was some love, and the rest of it was personal. Yes? Enough love, enough actually wanting to satisfy Krishna, that Krishna went to see her. But not enough that Krishna stayed with her. Just like Krishna Das Kaviraj explains the difference between love and lust, that love is the desire to satisfy someone else, and lust is the desire to use someone else to satisfy yourself. That's kind of a summation of the whole material world, not just in terms of sexual relationships, but in general, that conditioned souls in general try to use matter and other living beings to satisfy themselves, right? And if we're a little civilized, we pay for it. We don't just steal it, right? If you're a criminal, you just steal someone else's money or you steal someone else's body and you try to enjoy it by force. Meat eating, of course, and rape and theft are the epitomes of this mentality. Let me take something that is yours for my enjoyment at your expense. And then a little bit more civilized is I try to have some kind of deal, right? I try to do something for you in order to get you to do something for me. And of course, when we do that, we always try to end up ahead. We always try to get a little more than we give. That's why everyone likes a sale. Nobody worries that the merchant is losing money. Yeah? Nobody says, do you really want to sell me at this price? Yes, but of course Krishna says that such merchant exchanges, he says this in the 32nd chapter of the 10th canto, he says there's no dharma, there's no prema, there's no religion, there's no love. He said there's not even friendship and there's no happiness in such exchanges. And we find when we have such exchanges, we feel very entitled. I paid for this, therefore I deserve it. And by paying, I don't just mean money. You all follow what I'm saying? I do something for you, I expect something back. And this merchant mentality is at the root of basically all of our problems in this world, all of our frustrations with other people, that we and our frustrations with ourselves and with material energy. We think, you know, I'm giving out, why aren't I getting back in equal or greater measure? So love is where my happiness is your happiness. In order to have this experience, there has to be some sense of oneness with the other person. There has to be some sense of a lack of separation. And so we see this to some extent in relationships where we feel a oneness, like Prabhupada talks about the mother and the child, because the mother because the child grows inside the mother's body and is fed by the mother's body, the mother has some sense that this child and I are one, that this child is an extension of myself. And so, and of course, fathers also feel this way, but particularly we see this with mothers, that the child, if the child's happy, you're happy. And we see this also sometimes between husband and wife and friend, or employees in a company or citizens in a country. We may see this when we have, or fans in a football team, you know, where when someone or something that you feel that you're a part of, that you feel is your part of it, is happy, you can feel happy without that person or group giving anything back to you at all. So we experience this a little bit from time to time. So Kubja has some of this for Krishna. She's not just in it for herself. She has some feeling that I just want to make Krishna happy, and because I am part of Krishna, mamai vamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana, when Krishna's happy, I am happy. I don't need to be happy separately. Now, Krishna's wives, as being discussed here, have the next level. And their love is compared to a Chintamani jewel, not just an ordinary jewel, that most of the time, they're feeling that Krishna's happiness is their happiness. Most of the time. Rupa Goswami gives the example that when Rukmini wrote her letter to Krishna asking him to kidnap her, in that letter she was displaying this type of love, and therefore Krishna was controlled by her and came to kidnap her. But Rupa Goswami cites this particular verse, today's verse, as an example of a time when the queens could not control Krishna, when their mood was for their own happiness. And as soon as their mood was to their own happiness, then Krishna was not controlled by them. So that the queens generally see Krishna's happiness as their own happiness, but sometimes not. And the times when they don't, Krishna's just like, nope. The gopis, their love is compared to Krishna's kastuba jewel. And the Sanskrit term that Rupa Goswami uses is samartha. I'm sure you've all heard the term artha. Right? Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And artha, Prabhupada usually translates as? Economic development. Money. Something that's wanted. Artha literally means something that is wanted. We have this term in the progress of devotion, anartha nivritti. Getting rid of your anarthas. That doesn't mean counterfeit money exactly, literally, but it means something like counterfeit money. It means something that looks like it's valuable and it's not. So artha means something that's valuable, a goal. Some artha, some means the same. That we have the same goal. If we have some artha, we have the same goal. Prabhupada refers to this concept throughout his books and lectures, that oneness with Krishna means a oneness of, what's the word Prabhupada uses over and over again? Our oneness with Krishna is a oneness of interest. Krishna's interest and my interest are the same. Again, we have some experience in this world from time to time like that. If my husband's happy, I'm happy. If my wife's happy, I'm happy. If my child's happy, I'm happy. And when we have those little glimmers, we can get some idea of what love is. Because love, as Prabhupada explains in the Nectar of Devotion preface, love is inherent in all jivas. It says we can see this even in a tiger. As even some big mafia boss may love his wife or his dog. Right? Even some, you know, some murderer has affection for somebody. And love means like this. Ultimately, love means samartha. So the gopis have this love all the time. They don't see ever that they have some other interest. I mean, I found it interesting that even in the pure devotees with Krishna prema in the spiritual world, there are degrees of intensity of love. Isn't that interesting? That even Krishna's queens in Dwarka in the spiritual world, sometimes they think about themselves and then Krishna is detached. No, that's not what I want. In this world, every single conditioned soul is trying to control God. Everyone. Those who are atheists are trying to control God in his Virat Rupa. As Kunti says, you are the personality of the form of the universe. In Krishna's Virat Rupa, the trees are his hairs and the medicinal herbs. The clouds are the hairs on his head. The rivers are his veins. The ocean is his waist. The sky is his breath. Aren't the materialistic people constantly trying to control these? The horses, the elephants, the mules, they're on his nails. The quadrupeds are in his belt zone. The materialistic people are trying to control the land, the air, the water, the flow of the rivers, the movements of the air. On his nails are also electricity. And materialistic people are constantly trying to control the Lord's body and make it do what they want it to do, how they want it to do for their own sense gratification. Even if they don't have any intellectual or emotional belief in God. And those who claim that they are religious people are generally trying to control God more directly through ritual. If I just do this ritual, then God will do what I want him to do. And this is the case in every religion of the world, is it not? Yes, it's almost like thinking that religion is some kind of magic. You know, if I just say these particular prayers in this particular language, in this particular way, I'll be able to control God and he'll do what I want. Or they think of God as some kind of, as Prabhupada would use the word, order supplier. And Prabhupada ran a pharmaceutical business. Order supplier must have been like the way we think of a vendor. You know, if I'm going to be selling something, then I order from a vendor at wholesale prices so I can resell. And I place an order. Or like we order online from different companies. Or we go into a shop. But religious people often think that they can order from God with just flattery, which has always amazed me. Like imagine if you go into Walmart and you say, okay, I would like that television set and I would like that garbage can, but I'm not bringing any money. Just Walmart, you're so wonderful. You're great. You're powerful. You're beautiful. Please give me the purchases in my cart. So people often deal with God like that. Or we try to barter with God. You know, I'm going to be a good person. And I'm going to follow all the rules. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be pious. You know, the Jews have 613 rules they have to follow. Imagine that. I was just listening to a class the other day where Prabhupada was saying, it was like in 69 or something. He was saying, I haven't given you even 1% of the rules. I think if I just follow the rules, to me this is like dealing with God like a vending machine. You know, I just put in the money and I push the right buttons. He'll do what I want. And when God doesn't do what we want, as Prabhupada says, we become atheists. Prabhupada talked about the women in Germany during World War II. You know, please God, let my husband, let my son, let my father come back. And when they were killed, they said, there's no God. So the difficulty here is that Krishna is a person. Right? Or even as religious people, and this is again in any religion, ours included, sometimes try to control the Lord by their talents. By being an expert singer, an expert speaker, an expert deity dresser, or by their money. I've collected so much money for the Lord. I built such a huge church or a huge temple, or by their influence, you know, I have 3 million followers on TikTok that are all listening to my kirtans or something. You know, and we think that this way God will be obliged to us. I mean, look, if he's not going to be obliged by his own wives flirting with him when they have just a little bit, the tiniest, tiniest, tiniest speck of self-interest, then why would he be controlled by any of our shenanigans? It's absurd. And the whole concept reverses the relationship that we have with him. He's a person, and he's the most powerful person. We are meant to control him, actually. He wants to be controlled by us. That's his pleasure. Srila Prabhupada tells that story of this prime minister in England, and he had an appointment with some big person. And the person with whom he had an appointment was waiting for an hour to see him, and finally asked the secretary, you know, I had an appointment. When is the prime minister going to see me? Oh, he's busy, he's busy. What is he doing? Sir, he's very busy. And finally the man opens the door and he sees the prime minister is giving a horseback ride to his grandchild. This is love. My dear friends, this is why we marry. People don't just marry to fulfill their sexual desires or for economic reasons. People marry because they want to be controlled by love. They want someone they love so much that they're willing to give their life for them. This is why people have children. Right? You become the slave of your infant. Literally. You know, they don't even pay you. First 6 weeks, they don't even pay you with a smile, you know. Nothing. No payment at all. They're not even particularly cute the first month or so. Kind of this funny looking monkey. And all they do is cry and poop. But it's a pleasure to be controlled by love. That's why we have friends. It's why people serve their country and literally give their right arm in war. It's why people work for some mission or some cause, or even sometimes for a company. It's not just for the money or the this. We're hankering to be controlled by love. There's nothing that's more pleasurable than this. Nothing. This is why Krishna says to the gopis, he says, I can't repay you. Let your own love, your own service be your payment. What does that mean? That sense of loving Krishna, that sense of giving everything to Krishna is so satisfying that one doesn't need reciprocation from Krishna. Therefore, whatever you do, you embrace me, you trample me, whatever, it doesn't matter. My giving of love to you is satisfying. When we're in the other mentality, we feel empty and we feel we need to be filled, isn't it? If I feel I need you to do something for me, I need God to do something for me, I need God to control the world the way I want, it's because I'm feeling a lack. But when we're connected with Krishna, we don't feel a lack. We feel completely full. And this fullness is overflowing, like David says in the Bible, my cup is overflowing. Really, like Ashila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati comments on Anandam Buddhivardhanam in the Shikshastaka, he says the jiva is infinitesimal, but when the jiva is in touch with the infinite, then the jiva can feel infinite happiness. When we actually understand that I'm part and parcel of Krishna, we're connected with Krishna. That's what yoga means, yukta. We feel Krishna's infinite, everything. And it's like, I picture it like one of these springs of water that just keeps flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing. And this, it's constantly filling the devotee to overflowing, and they want to just keep giving this love to Krishna and to everyone, and that's their satisfaction. And Krishna's fascinated by that and enchanted by that, just like we are. You're enchanted by loving and by being loved. Am I correct? Isn't it enchanting? We become overwhelmed. We forget about what we wanted to do or what we wanted to accomplish. We don't care about what's going on in another part of the world or down the street. Nothing matters to us how much money we have in the bank. And so many mundane love songs are like that. You know, as soon as I'm with you, the world goes away. There's nothing left. And without you, the world is empty. Sunyaitam jagat sarvam. So Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, in the story of Jambavan, that Krishna has all the sentiments that we have. You know, the Bible says this, we're made in his image. We can understand something of Krishna by looking at ourselves. And Krishna's fascinated by love. Even though we're so tiny, our tininess is actually inconceivable, how tiny we are. Yeah, we're really tiny. We look at the night sky, all the different planets and stars, and our little earth is nothing. It's just nothing. It's hardly a speck in the universe. And then on this planet, what is Chicago? It's a speck. And so what are we here? We're a speck of a speck of a speck of a speck of a speck. But still, Krishna's fascinated. He's fascinated. He's intrigued. Yes, wow. There's someone who loves me. And the irony, of course, is that when we love Krishna, we no longer want to control him. That is the irony. In fact, we're happy to be controlled by him. When we love him, we want him to control us, and he wants us to control him. And there's this competition that Krishna Das Kaviraj described, who can serve the other more. We shouldn't think that Krishna's like some kind of big, mean dictator. In this world, people who want to control us are generally evil, generally. So we may think like that, but it's not. Krishna longs to be controlled by us, the great, the most powerful, the biggest of the biggest, for whom this planet is a mustard seed on his head that he doesn't even notice, who breathes out infinite universes, who's in everyone's heart, who's in every atom. Everything comes into being in this world by his dreaming, who expands himself to be with every living being at once. Such a great being, and we're so small, and he wants to be controlled by our love. So this is what Bhakti Yoga is all about. And Bhakti Yoga is, we can say, the best path because it is the most direct. It gets right to the root. Karma yoga, first you become peaceful by giving away the fruits of your work, and in that peace you can meditate on the Lord. In Gyan yoga, you become peaceful by being detached from your happiness and distress, and fame and infamy and honor and dishonor and heat and cold, and in that peacefulness you can find that you're a soul. In Dhyan yoga, where you have to go to the forest and you have to sit on deerskin and you have to stare at the tip of your nose and you have to eat fruits and roots and you have to be a brahmachari, and you know, hopefully Menaka doesn't come along and disrupt your whole practice, and then you work on the life airs, and then you can find the super soul in your heart, and then you can learn to love him, and we just go right to loving him. We just go directly to loving Krishna. I was hearing this morning Prabhupada saying, in what other process can a child engage in yoga? Prabhupada says even a dog can take part, isn't it? In the Harinam. So anybody. And Krishna is so lovable. It is very easy to love Krishna. That's not a difficult thing to do. It may be difficult to control the mind. It may be difficult to follow so many rituals and this and that. But to love Krishna is not difficult. And then Krishna's heart melts. And he says, yes, you are mine. And the devotee says, yes, I am Krishna's and he is mine. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Yes.
Okay. My name is Howard. And I used to live in the temple about, I think, 1982. But I want to say it's coming from the material world. But in the material world,
yes, love of God is already within us.
Okay. So I'm not to establish. Okay, they got sent into the world looking for love in all the wrong places.
In all the wrong places, in all the wrong ways, yes.
Okay. I may read the Gita after all the Gita start the love and all that.
Back into the Gita, good. No intoxication.
To the teeth.
Okay.
The mouth of the scripture. But now, how can I manifest this love, which is, I mean, with the highest goal of life, everybody looking for love. How can I manifest this love from within to without?
How can you manifest this love from within to without? First of all, it doesn't matter if you're living in the temple or not. Srila Prabhupada was once asked, is it faster if you're living in the temple? He said, that depends on whether your mind is on another subject matter. Okay, so it's not geography. It's not that, like, I've been the last few days sleeping right there. So it's not that because I'm sleeping there and someone else is sleeping down the street that I'm more Krishna conscious. It doesn't work like that. It depends where your consciousness is. Okay? All right. So how do we manifest the love that's inside to the outside? Well, that is our whole practice, which is called sadhana bhakti or abhyas yoga. We're practicing love. Practicing love may seem very strange. How can you practice love? So think about, like, if you have a husband and wife and they've been arguing a lot, they've been fighting a lot, and they forgot that they love each other. I was once counseling one couple. They said, whenever we look at each other's faces, we feel angry. I said, when you have an argument, do you look at each other's face? And they said, yes. I said, then you're associating the face with the anger. So I said, okay, look away from each other, and I want you to think about some time that you felt a lot of affection for each other, until you feel that again. And once you feel it, now look at each other's faces. Reprogram. And I said, next time you're angry, just look at their feet, don't look at their face. So that was a practice. My point is, that was a practice. They're still together and they do love each other. So that was a practice. I gave them some sort of a technique. I gave them some sort of a practice by which they could rekindle the love that was already there.
Any good therapist, any good counselor, that's exactly what they do. They help you to rediscover what's already there. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Prabhupada have given us a set of practices that if we follow them with the proper mentality, we'll take that natural love that's within our heart and bring it to the outside. Now, we do have to do it with the proper mentality. It's not just a mechanical process. But the process of chanting the holy name. When you love somebody, you like to say their name, right? Of course. There's so many love songs where they're singing someone's name. So when you love someone, you like to talk about them. You like to hear about what they've been doing. Am I correct? Yes? If you care about someone, you want to know, what did they do? What are they doing? What have they done? You hear about them. You talk about them. You think about them. You say their name. You communicate with them. You do things for them. You tell other people how wonderful they are. You like to go to the places where they stay or where they have stayed in the past and think about their activities. Am I correct? You like to be with other people who also love them. So if the love has become hidden from us, we practice those things. Until by practicing of those things, as Prabhupada will say, it reawakens our natural love. Just like a husband and wife who've become estranged, they can do things that reawaken those feelings. They can go to the places where they first met. They can listen to the song that they first danced to. Do you follow what I'm saying? So we do this with Krishna. We go to his holy places. We listen to the songs about him. We associate with people whose love has awakened for him. And in this way, by that practice, at a certain point, it's like, oh, yes, I really do like Krishna. Does that answer your question? Can you put the microphone closer so the people in far-flung places of the world can hear you? Yes. Yes. Right. So this is a question of, I like that you brought this up. This is a question of something that Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, of secret things, I am silence. And Prabhupada says, in the process of hearing and chanting, silence is the most effective. So we need to also listen. You know, sometimes we're in a conversation with another human where we're so busy saying what we want to say that we never hear what they want to say. Yes? So we need to listen. Krishna is reciprocating with us. He is talking to us. But we need to hear him. We need to listen. He's talking to us in the Bhagavad Gita. You say you're reading, want to read the Bhagavad Gita cover to cover. That's Krishna speaking. That is Krishna speaking. So many verses in the Bhagavatam are Krishna speaking. Krishna speaks through the words of Guru. Krishna speaks through nature. Prabhupada talks about even if you're uneducated, by seeing nature one can understand. Prabhupada often equates the laws of nature and the laws of God. So it is a question of listening. And sometimes what Krishna tells us wasn't what we expected to hear or thought we wanted to hear. And therefore it may be hard to hear him because he's saying something we didn't expect.
Okay, I want to ask if there's... Thank you so much. Is there anyone else who would like to add anything? Yes, Gaur Prabhu. Could you get the mic? Could you hand the mic back?
Just to support one of the underlying points that you were making today, I found in the 10th canto of the 3rd chapter, 2nd verse, where the Supreme Lord said, just as Rukmini's mind is fixed on me, my mind is fixed on her. I can't even sleep at night. I know that Rukmini, Adhavendi, has forbidden our marriage.
Thank you. Thank you. And of course, that's very appropriate for this chapter about Lord Balaram slaying Rukmini. That was wonderful. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, Prabhu. Just what?
Looked up the word love.
Okay.
See just how deep it went, right? And to make a long story short, it's basically, it described as a deep affection. But with prayer, it's not just affection. So with that one day that I spent, spends the time to understand this word, it made a big difference. So I guess in a short amount of time, I guess just suggest that person do some new research.
Go deep into the meaning of that word, yes. Yes. I mean, I've heard definitions like you're fascinated by someone and they have real value to you. It matters whether or not they're there. And again, that your happiness, that is their happiness. There's a oneness of happiness. Prabhupada sometimes defines material life and spiritual life like that. You know, that material life means that I'm happy when you're unhappy. And I'm unhappy when you're happy, which is the basis of envy. And spiritual life is I'm unhappy when you're unhappy, and I'm happy when you're happy. Which again has this sense of a lack of separation. Well, thank you very, very much for this opportunity. And thank you, many of you are also visitors. But anyway, I want to thank all the devotees here at ISKCON Chicago for their incredible, incredible, over-the-top hospitality, just like amazing. And I hope you all get a good rest when we go. Yes, Prabhu.